The ECG changes of hyperkalemia are well known to virtually all emergency providers. They include T-wave peaking, QRS widening, reduced P-wave amplitude until the P-wave eventually disappears, and ultimately, as the QRS complex continues to widen, there will be a blending of the QRS with the T-wave to produce a continuous sine wave electrocardiogram, with V-fib or a systole usually following soon thereafter as the terminal event. My purpose in presenting this brief audio is to hopefully add a few pearls for ECG recognition of hyperkalemia that are not always thought of. For example, certain serum potassium levels are often cited as corresponding to the various ECG changes of hyperkalemia. T-wave peaking is usually the first change seen, often beginning even before serum potassium levels reach 6 milliequivalents per liter, with T-wave peaking persisting through serum K values in the 7 to 8 range. In the high 7 to 8 range, QRS widening and reduced P-wave amplitude are commonly seen, until the 9 to 10 milliequivalent per liter range is reached, at which point P-waves often disappear, and the continually widening QRS complex ultimately evolves into a sine wave ECG. But not all patients read the textbook, so these generalities for serum K values and their corresponding ECG changes are not strictly followed. For example, your patient may show QRS widening at levels well under 7.5, or T-wave peaking may be delayed and not be seen until a K of 7 or higher is reached. That said, in any given patient, the sequence for developing the series of ECG changes tends to be surprisingly consistent for that particular patient. This point is particularly relevant if you work in a clinical setting in which some patients are frequent visitors. To illustrate this concept, I'll relate a personal anecdote. I distinctly remember an elderly patient who frequently presented to our service with recurrent episodes of dehydration, which, due to reduced intravascular volume, precipitated moderate to severe hyperkalemia on many occasions. As the one who read all ECGs on our service, I remember being able to look at this patient's ECGs and immediately know with good accuracy how severe her dehydration was likely to be for any given episode, based on the severity of her ECG findings that I had become so familiar with, for predicting how high her serum K was likely to be. I'll emphasize that there is variation from one patient to the next, so T-wave peaking that in this patient might suggest a serum K of 6.5 might correspond to a significantly different serum K value in another patient. Next, I'll add to the list of potential ECG changes seen with hyperkalemia a number of additional findings. For example, the QRS may present a highly unusual ECG appearance. In my experience, all bets are off regarding QRS morphology in the presence of significant hyperkalemia. I've seen bizarre frontal plane axes, including an all-negative QRS in lead 1, and I've seen a variety of unusual QRS morphologies that are unlike any form of known bundle branch block. That said, despite an unpredictable morphology for wide QRS complexes with hyperkalemia, you'll often still see Eiffel Tower-like T-waves in multiple leads that strongly suggest the diagnosis. By Eiffel Tower-like, I mean not only tall, but surprisingly symmetric, with equal ascending and descending limbs of the T-wave, and with a much skinnier base for the T-wave than is likely to be seen with either hyperacute or De Winter T-waves or with repolarization variants. Often overlooked is the possibility that instead of seeing tall, peaked, if not pointed, T-waves that are upright, you'll sometimes see deep, skinny, negative T-waves that are equally pointed at the place of deepest descent. It is how skinny these negative T-waves are that stands out. And the shape of these skinny, pointed, negative T-waves is an important clue that when you see it, should make you think of hyperkalemia. And then there is the problem of the rhythm with hyperkalemia. Think of what happens with progressively increasing serum K values. The QRS widens, and P-wave amplitude progressively decreases until the P-wave disappears. The interesting part about these P-wave changes is that the sinus node is often still able to transmit the electrical impulse to the ventricles, even though no P-wave may be seen on the ECG. In acknowledgement of the fact that despite the lack of any P-wave on the ECG, the rhythm is still initiated in the sinus node, this phenomenon is called a sinoventricular rhythm. But the problem is that we may not know that the rhythm is sinus-initiated at the time we are looking at the ECG, because there is no P-wave to be seen. If the rhythm is not fast, then this looks like a junctional rhythm. And if the hyperkalemia has widened the QRS and there is no P wave to be seen, then this will look like a ventricular rhythm, perhaps an accelerated ventricular rhythm if the rate is between 60 to 100 or so. But if there is tachycardia and the QRS is wide and doesn't look like any known form of bundle branch block, and there is no P wave to be seen, then the rhythm may look like VT despite the fact that what the rhythm really is a sinoventricular rhythm from hyperkalemia. The treatment for this is IV calcium and not antiarrhythmics or shock. The good news is that if not given too rapidly, IV calcium is usually quite safe, and this drug generally exerts its protective effect on the heart within 1 to 3 minutes of administration. And if the rhythm and ECG findings improve, the dose of IV calcium can be repeated. So there may be times when you suspect hyperkalemia that it will be best to try IV calcium even before the serum potassium level returns from the laboratory. There is a final level of complexity that I'll add with regard to determination of the rhythm in a patient with significant hyperkalemia, namely that in addition to bradycardia, many types of AV block are possible, and sometimes the patient's heart will not have read the textbook regarding the usual characteristics of the various forms of AV block. Bottom line, in my opinion, it is not worth wasting time trying to figure out the specific rhythm diagnosis of a bradycardia when there is hyperkalemia. I used to spend hours trying to do this, but after years of doing so, I finally realized that a specific rhythm diagnosis is rarely possible when there is significant hyperkalemia. And even if you succeed in making a diagnosis such as Wenckebach, it is likely that as intra- and extracellular potassium gradients change, that the cardiac rhythm will also soon change. And realistically speaking, it just does not matter clinically what the specific rhythm diagnosis is once you recognize a level of hyperkalemia that needs immediate treatment. Because usually within minutes after giving IV calcium, the bad rhythm, whatever it is, will probably go away, often with surprisingly rapid reestablishment of sinus rhythm. Finally, there is a basic principle that to my observation is all too often ignored, and that is that the ECG represents the net effect of all of the heart's electrical activity. This means that if a patient's baseline ECG showed a lot of ST depression, say from ischemia and or LV strain, and if on top of this patient now develops significant hyperkalemia, which would normally produce tall peak T waves and multiple leads, what will the net effect of diffuse baseline ST depression with superimposed tall peak T waves look like? The answer is that the new tall peak T waves from hyperkalemia may in large part cancel out much of the diffuse baseline ST depression from ischemia and strain, with the result being that despite a serum K of 6 or 7, the ECG might not look anything like hyperkalemia, or like ischemia or strain for that matter. It's important to realize that it is impossible to know how much the hyperkalemia is influencing QRS width and ST-T wave morphology until you normalize serum K, and then repeat the ECG. So the clinical reality is that hyperkalemia may either mimic or mask ischemic ECG changes. The solution is simple. Fix the hyperkalemia and then repeat the ECG to assess whether anything else might be going on with the patient.